All right, we're rolling. Now I have to remember the English language. I'm tired today.
Hello, everybody. How are we doing? Hi, Kitty. Hi, Dan.
Hello. It's day two, and I'm already exhausted. Day two of the everyday. This is day three, because we're doing a day in advance. Welcome to day three of the Everyday Novelist NaNoWriMo Write Through for 2020. Joining me today is everybody. Tori's not here at the moment, but she recorded earlier, so we'll just cut her in later. I am joined by Kitty.
Hello.
And by Alexis.
Hello there.
And by Gail Carriger.
Hello. How are we all doing today?
Day three.
I'm tired. I didn't sleep well last night.
That's because he was too busy writing.
No. I went to bed on time. I woke up early, probably because of the stupid time change. But
Yes, the time change.
Yes. I used to love the time change, but I've hit that point where my circadian rhythms do not bounce around like they used to. And this is annoying. I do not like this part of
middle age. That's what sleeping in beforehand is for.
Yes, you prepare by sleeping in for the couple of weeks ahead of time, right?
There you go.
That was completely my intention.
All right, shall we report our words in, everybody?
Yes, let's do.
I'm excited for this part.
Ooh, do you want to go first?
Yeah, go first, Alexis.
I have 428 words of actual,
story?
Story. That
cool.
One. Well, that's
Yay!
Added on to what we had.
Oh, added on to what we had.
Started a new document.
So your total word count then will be 600 and... total of 632 words. You're almost over 1,000. Congratulations. How about you, Kitty? Where are you at?
I got 12 new words.
12?
Yeah.
Wow. Sorry, I'm feeling a little stroppy. 600.
Yes, you are. I'm going to punch you for it.
Oh, boy. I can't wait.
I had a busy brain day that I could not, my brain could not settle down for more than 10 minutes at a time. So,
well, that sucks.
I ping-ponged a lot.
Ah. How about you, Gail? What is your total word count now?
My total's 50,080. 50080.
50080, right. And not 5080, 50080. So you got 1,006 words today.
Right.
Tori, what was your day like?
Wonderful.
Why am I not convinced?
It wasn't so bad. It's just, you know, yesterday I did pretty well. The start of the day and got about, I think, like 928 words or something. I told you 1,000, but it's like 928.
928, okay.
Yeah, and then today I did 334. I had 333, and then I was like, no, I can't have that. It
so
needs
that
to
puts
be four,
you
so I put
12.
Another one. I was like, no.
1,261. 62.
Two. Oh, okay.
Yeah, 334.
I can't do math right now. Let's not do that.
Cool.
Is
it coming along okay?
It's going okay. I'm really just focusing on the characters. And that's something that last year I didn't do. I was like, oh, the story, everything, and I want to focus on the characters, and that will help me develop the story, because what are their motives, what are they scared of, what are they happy about, like, that's what I want.
I find that works well for me, too.
Does it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Even, or maybe even especially when I'm doing high concept stuff, like the one that I've got now is very high concept, but...
Yeah.
To get my fingers into it, I have to get into the characters.
Okay, so that was what I was going to ask you. Like, is that a good starting point?
Yeah, it is. If you know, at least if you're someone who's inclined towards characters.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So
there you go.
I mean, the character makes it for me, honestly.
There you go.
And also, okay, so I've been writing each chapter little by little.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of outlining each chapter slightly. And then I'll go in and how do you do that? Do you just go on in a chapter and you're like, okay, chapter one done, move on to chapter two? Or do you,
I tend to run, as I'm writing, I think about what needs to come next. I don't always know the order, but I have a few line breaks and then the notes start. And then when I get stuck, I scroll down and I look at the notes and I pull something up that looks like it'll fit. And if nothing does, I sit and I read through the last little bit and think, okay, well, what else needs to happen? So it's less formal than a lot of people, but it really works for me because my brain goes every which way.
Yeah, that's how mine does that too. So I think I'm focusing now because it's more emotional to me and it feels real to me. Like, mm-hmm. The juxtaposition between light and dark, and I think that is what, I mean, that's a gothic horror.
Oh, yeah.
In a, you can't just do everything's sad and terrible. Like, you need that juxtaposition, otherwise it's kind of...
Yeah.
You don't get that.
Right, otherwise jolt. It's all gray and there's no...
So I'm trying to focus in on that, and I like it. It makes me happy, question mark? I don't know. Like, is nice. This supposed to make me happy?
Yeah. When you tap I mean, it's not that it's always fun and games. Sometimes it's real work, but
yeah.
When you're in a groove, oh man, it's joyous.
I was in a groove for a little bit yesterday. Today, just barely any, but tomorrow will definitely be, excuse me, puberty, more of a groove. what happened there? more of a groove. You know, the Mondays and Wednesdays are going to be tough for me because I'm teaching and it's exhausting, even though I love them. They're amazing.
Oh, you got a third of what you did yesterday and you didn't have to teach yesterday. So that's pretty good.
I'm working on it, doing different things. So.
And my total is now at 6381, giving me a grand total of 2170 today.
Woo!
So. I'm
excellent.
Actually,
you guys have such big numbers.
I'm like ahead by a whole day.
That is great.
So, yep. Well, gotta.
You're on a roll.
Yeah, now if only I could do that much on each book every day. That's the next
step. You're on a roll.
Is to switch between them.
I can't imagine doing that. In fact, I tried it and I can't do that. I must write only one project at a time.
Well, I've frequently done it with fiction and nonfiction. Without a problem.
Yes.
Fiction and fiction, sometimes I can do it, sometimes it's really hard. At the moment, I don't have a good enough grip on all the new characters in the new book to be able to pop back and forth yet. So I'm hoping I can get into the new book enough that it's like slipping into an old pair of socks or something. And then I should be able to put one sock on each hand, so to speak. Never mind.
You've lost the metaphor.
My metaphor is just that one ran away from me.
With your socks.
My socks.
Do we have any questions or a topic for today?
Sort of. I've kind of hit a wall on my scene because I got up to the point where she actually has to talk to someone.
Uh-oh. Dialogue.
Yeah. And I don't know how normal social interactions are supposed to work in ancient Greece. And, I mean, not 100% right now anyway.
Then I would say you can write it just as a regular social interaction for now and then change it later once you know more about how people talked and greeted each other and stuff.
The issue is, I think it's, like, substantial enough because of some really weird gender roles in ancient Greece that I need to have it more or less firm in the beginning, if that makes sense.
What about, you're talking with two people who know a lot about the classical world, so what about ancient Greek gender roles particularly is vexing you?
Well, the thing is, I read that when men could afford it, they tried to keep their wives solitary, and that sounds like it would, like, massively confuse the social interactions between people. In public.
So, all right, there was the, I think it was in the Golden Age, the wives tended to live back on the estates, and they were not allowed to interact with any of the male field hands, only the female household servants. It was very sex segregated. And then the people then at one point, I'm not sure if it was the same era, the wives were expected to accompany the men to certain social functions, and I remember little bits like the popularity of white lead makeup was a really big thing during a certain part of the era, but I'm not quite sure how the public social functions worked. Gail, do you have a good handle on this? It's been a while.
It's pretty mobile in different parts of ancient Greek history.
City-state had a different thing going on.
Right. Like, I have two pulls for male interactions that are very well done. Mary Renault, you can always read Mary Renault. Last of the Wine is her book, and it's almost all dialogue-driven also, but it's mostly men. And then The Song of Achilles, of course, although you could try Circe. I haven't read Circe, but I would trust that author to have done her research, so that's probably very good. But there is something, there's a book called, I think it's called The Three Julias. No, that would be Caesar. No, that would be Rome. Yeah, those are the only two fictions I can pull off the top of my head that I know have quite a bit of dialogue and are ancient Greek. But yes, I think most of your, like, if you're using dialogue to convey information or engage in an important, like, relationship conversation, it is better if you're doing two women talking or two men talking. If the conversation that you need to do is between a wife and her husband, then they're most of the time relatively unfamiliar with each other in terms of, like, familiarity in terms of the way Americans think about partnerships between men and women. There was always a pretty high level of formality in place.
It's a business relationship. And
men and women just wouldn't approach each other in public?
They didn't socialize together. Ancient Greek was very homosocial. So men socialized with men and prostitutes, and women socialized with other women and then with children, or with their adult children. So,
household staff.
Right. So
I didn't choose an easy subject.
for example, if you have a wife who wants to get important information to her husband and he's in the city and she's out on the estate, but they have a teenaged or a grown son who works the estate, she would probably talk to the son and send the message into town that way with her son.
Or you use a household servant. Who has a kid who is a runner.
I might just have to completely redo the time period because a lot of the idea kind of revolves around interactions.
Well, you could move it to Rome, which is a little bit more way more flexible, in fact.
You could also take it out into the countryside away from the city-states where things were more rustic.
All right.
Or you can drop it class.
Yep, you could drop to a lower class too. Yeah,
merchant and peasant and so forth are always more gender interactive. A good example of an author who's using a Greek chassis for a sci-fi piece is Kate Elliott's Court of Fives, which is a great young adult book that uses, I think it's sort of Roman, but it's kind of Greco-Roman occupied Egypt. But it deals with Little Women, but in that setting and with, with a physical games component, like the Hunger Games and so it's a bunch of sisters. And so it's from their perspective and you get a feel for how limited their exposure is to society and stuff like that. And one of them disguises herself as a boy and goes out to play in the games. So
what did you say it was?
It's called Court, as in High Court, you know, of Five, as in the number five, Fives, because the games are played, the Court of Fives, there are five challenges in the games, so that's why the title comes from. But it's really interesting to see, and she's a very acute, skilled, established sci-fi fantasy author, and it's really fun, and her husband's an archaeologist of a Roman occupied Egyptian settlement in Egypt. So she knows exactly what she's talking about. And it's really fun to see her skill at executing, you know, a history. So it's not actual history. It's alt. But it's really fun to see her playing with that. And one of the things that she plays with is the social structure. So she is dealing with a social structure that's based on a historical, ancient historical one.
All right.
But that's a lot of reading to do. That doesn't like solve your problem immediately.
Yeah. The immediate hacks would be to drop a social class or to move them out into the country away from the city states. Or you could
dropping a social class make it more similar to where we're at modernly?
If particularly if you push them into the merchant class, merchant classes everywhere in all societies have much more blending of the sexes than the landed gentry, which are the class that tends to write the most, whose writings survived from that world because they were the academics and the philosophers and all that stuff.
Merchants tend to be also relatively socially flexible in terms of they have to change their linguistic like tonalities and behaviors in order to deal with the clients who are upper class. But then they have to deal with the tradesmen and the suppliers who will be lower class.
And often so from different countries, too.
And yeah, exactly. So merchants will exist in this liminal space. It makes it a very interesting class setting if you're writing historical.
And the reason it'll be more, it's closer to what you're used to, is that
America is a trading nation and the British are a trading nation, and that's one of the reasons that our social dynamics have driven us toward integration over the centuries.
Not the only reason, but one of them.
Yeah, a merchant class, in other words, you'll have a more intimate family structure. You'll have more, the female characters will have a great deal more leeway. In fact, in some cases, and I don't know if this is true for ancient Greek, because ancient Greek was very homogenous, but in a lot of places, the children are genderless until they attain puberty. And so you can have a younger, like, female child who is essentially isn't a female. She just is a child and is therefore out in the street interacting with people and running around and doing things and taking on all sorts of different jobs and tasks and stuff like, you know, working kids are working kids. You work as a child in most ancient cultures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
So you can have, there's definitely more gender flexibility for merchant and younger. And peasant classes.
All right.
Is there anything else about running into the dialogue wall that's presenting a problem for you aside from that?
Well, yes. I need to come up with a reason why she would talk to someone. I'm not actually sure if the dialogue is necessary at this point. I just need to move the scene along. Mm. And I don't want to delay the dialogue too long, because I know I just straight up won't include dialogue.
It is possible. It's hard sometimes, but it is possible to tell full stories with no dialogue. If you're having
trouble... I don't want to do that, because I know it would be bad for me.
If you're having trouble getting your fingers into it, though, you can fall back on the old dramatist's rule that the secret to good dialogue is, or in fact all dialogue, is that people don't talk to each other unless they want something.
That's the problem.
It could be that they want connection, it could be that they want emotional support, it could be that they're bored and they want entertainment, or it could be something tangible, like they want to convince the other person to do something for them, or they want the other person to give them something.
Or they could want food and they get gossip, right?
That's right.
You know, like you're walking out in the street and she's like, go get 6 honey cakes, and it goes to the honey cake vendor, and the honey cake vendor is like, oh my God, here are your 6 honey cakes. But did you know that so-and-so is sleeping with her husband, you know, that guy's wife or something,
yeah,
right?
In which case you have the honey cake vendor. The honey cake vendor wants socialization and gossip,
exactly.
And the customer wants the honey cakes. And so the customer's putting up. And so each of them's trying to get something different out of the other one. And that's where drama comes from.
And if you're writing like a shy, self-effacing, like character who doesn't like to talk, that kind of other character is very annoying to them.
Yep.
But the other character is very excited by a quiet character because it means they get to talk, right? So you can...
I think I'm writing an angry and resentful character, which I'm not sure I know how to do because I don't live in that headspace most of the time in quad.
Well, you will need to decide whether your angry, resentful character is vengeful, is the kind of person who wants to exert the anger in a vengeful fashion, or is there something?
Yes.
Okay. So they may be...
They just want to do it tactfully.
So they would be probably a little bit circuitous and manipulative about it.
Yeah, that's the whole point of the book.
Okay.
So what about you, Dan? You're bucketing along with yours. You said you got 2,000 in. Are your characters moving along and things are going well?
I'm starting to get my fingers into them. I got a really good scene done and then realized that I needed another chapter in between the scene I wrote and the chapter I just finished. So I'm now filling in the gaps. I'm having one of the things I'm having fun in scare quotes time with is... The problem with space travel is that it's boring. And, of course, for the reality TV show, this is desperately bad. And so they're...
Yes!
The producers are now at the stage where the ratings are going down. They're trying to manipulate people into drama, which means I have to figure out not just the cozy angle, which is what is everybody's secret that's going to come out when the people start dying and that sort of thing, but... I would normally develop people's basic character through interaction, but I actually have to know beforehand this time because the producers are going to have their psych profiles and they're going to be trying to induce them to behave in ways that are counter to type so that it's more surprising for the reality TV show audience. So I got two of them.
Would the producers have been looking for particular psych types?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they've deliberately filled the crew with people who will not get along. The crew has gotten around this problem by spreading out in the ship, and they're not interacting with each other, except when they need to for work, which is why the ratings are going down. Because the ship's too big for the crew, because it was bought off the lot. So that means that I have to actually do character sheets or my rough equivalent of them, which I never do. So that's all kinds of fun. But so that and trying to figure out what the right kind of dysfunctions are for people in this situation, and particularly resisting the urge to make them feel stereotypically normal, which would be easy, but for me, boring. So they're all screwed up in very unusual ways, at least in terms of what you would expect to see prevalent in pop culture. So I'm having to do little scenes that let me do one-on-one pair interactions when I had been hoping to do something like I did in Down from 10 with big group interactions that spin things off really fast. I keep thinking of Down from 10.
Is there a way to get either to force a proximity alert where there's an accident that shuts down part of the ship that makes them all have to move to a different part of the ship, or is there a way to have the producers impose a fake intimacy thing like a game upon them where like we have to play a charades now or whatever.
That's exactly what I've got developing and at the moment. Okay. So the producers have planned a whole bunch of fake problems and other stuff, and they're starting to pull things out of their bag of tricks in a way that escalates it. So they've got one person who's been directed under threat of cancellation of her contract and losing all of her pay, which will put her family out on the street, to start flirting with people because she's the prude on the ship. So I've got her sorted out, and then another one, I'm halfway through a scene where we're finding out about one of the guys is a really grouchy guy who has figured out how to put up this stoic front, but he's just been caught sobbing because we're going to find out that someone has stolen a very special thing that that his mother made for him or something. And it's going to turn out that there's a thief on the ship, a klepto, who's stealing all everyone's personal things in order to create conflict. So that should help get things moving.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds good. That all sounds, yeah. The other thing I was going to recommend was Kleptomania. So, hey, great minds and all that.
Covering Kleptomania. Yeah, and I've actually got, once I get the ball rolling, I've got six or seven really, really nasty sorts of games that the producers are going to play before the actual dying starts that should really get things, really get things moving along.
Good. Cool. Well, I have the seasons changing things that I was working on, so that's occurring. We haven't had the next natural disaster yet, but I accidentally had a confrontation scene spout on me, which is fine. It's okay. our main character has essentially three love interests, one of whom is fake. And the other two who are actually are interested in him, but one of the other two is already dating somebody else. It's very dramatic. We're in college, okay?
oh, boy.
Oh, yes. But the two love interests who are actually interested in him, like, come in to, like, and there's a whole confrontation, and there's a whole joke about wontons, which is just, like... It's so me that I, like, couldn't leave humor. Like, this is not supposed to be a funny book, but I literally have my main character yelling wontons at the top of his, voice.
And now you've got me craving Chinese food. Oh.
Sorry. Well, these are fried wontons, and they're getting into an argument about, they figured out the first two courses of a menu, and they're trying to do this a sweets course, and so they're deciding to try and do a sweet fried wonton. And, But the other two characters keep, like, allegorically talking about him as the wonton.
Yeah.
Because they both have different ideas on filling.
I was going to say, are they making it a sexual pun because he's a wonton?
Sort of, yes. Yeah. And at the very end, he's like, at the very end, he literally says, I'm just the wonton in the middle, because he knows they're arguing about him. And I went there, and I... Nice. I can't put a joke down, you guys. I can't do it. So it turned into a funny scene.
Yeah, well, hey, Krudrat was not a comedy, but it had some great funny moments in it. So, you know, you don't do it in a lot of your books, but you're very good at doing the serious and the full of pathos with little jokes here and there to spice it up, so...
That's kind of a bit more like this one is, but it was unexpected. I had not planned a wonton in the middle joke, but there it is. So that's what happened to me today. And we have to, I have a serious magical execution scene that I have to write next. So I got to go back and reread a previous scene that was the last level of magic that they attained, because I can't remember where I am and what I'm doing. So, so tomorrow is going to be more rereading than normal, but
that's where I am.
That's okay. I can do it. Tomorrow is an actual writing day for me. So the first 3 days we've had are actually days of the week that I would normally not be writing. So tomorrow, like, I'll be, like, back in my normal groove of headspace of, like, it's Tuesday, I write from X to X time. Like, here we go. So I'm hoping that will help me.
Cool, yeah. My word count was lower than my normal for today, both because of the tired and because I spent some time installing a heater in my garage writing space so that I can write in the cold. And, it's lovely. So we've got my little computer set up out there, and a big ass propane heater right next to me going right in my face. It's great.
Nice.
It's actually right on my fingers, because I can tolerate an amazing amount of cold except in the ends of my fingers. But,
nice. Very nice.
Even with gloves.
Yeah, even with gloves. Well, because you can't have fingers on the gloves, or you can't hit the keys. So I have to cut the fingers off the gloves.
And then your fingers get cold.
And then my fingers get cold.
For those who don't know, Dan is in Maine. Which is why it's so cold.
Yes, and it will get colder, though we're having a warm weekend this weekend, which is nice.
Well, that'd be nice.
So, it'll be up in the 60s. Right now it's in the 20s.
Ooh, yuck.
Well, on that note, Alexis has another...
I'm sorry, I have a few more merchant questions. Do you guys think that, in general, the merchant class would avoid, talking between genders if there isn't a sale going on?
Oh, you mean like in casual conversation out in the street or what have you?
Yes.
If it's a girl, it depends on marital age and stuff like that.
Okay.
I would say.
So are you talking about conversation with strangers or conversation within the family?
Strangers.
Or what? Strangers, yeah. If the girl is of marriageable age, she would be... either quite careful about that, or she would have be risking reputational damage and disapproval of her family and all sorts of fun stuff like that.
I'm not so concerned with how the main character views how the social interaction is going, rather the characters around her, because she doesn't understand it as well as everyone else does.
Okay.
That is a source of conflict. So that
you've got a good source of conflict.
If you're asking whether people around would interfere or anything like that, not unless they were her family members or very intimate with her family, you know, like surrogate auntie, uncle types. Yeah. She would just get looked at askance, I would say.
And the gossip could start, too.
And the gossip could start. Yep. But you might want that. That's those are both inciting incidents. Yep. That might be a good thing.
Let's call it then.
All right.
All
right. Well,
die.
Good night. Happy riding, yeah. Everybody.
Yeah, you too. See you tomorrow.